Hey everyone, it's Deb. You're listening to my podcast, Debbie Does Dating, part two of our divorce and taxes episode with Andrea Winkler.
Debbie Does Dating with your host, Debbie Clawson, sponsored by Dating by Deb.
So thanks for coming back. Andrea is a CPA, certified public accountant, and a partner at Davis & Bott CPAs in Brigham City and Tremonton. We didn't get done with our questions last time, so I wanted her to come back on and we can talk about the rest.
Great.
Okay, Andrea, you said that you've got another awkward dating moment for us.
Oh, yeah.
We want to hear it.
All right. So this one happened, I might have even still been in high school on this one. I think I was a senior.
Okay.
And I got set up on a blind date with a guy from out of town whose mom I went to class with.
Oh, wow.
You know you get shining praise if the mom wants to set you up. Anyways. So.
At least the mom likes you.
Yeah.
Or you like the mom.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. Anyway, so I met this guy for the first time and he's like, hey, let's go to a movie. And I'm like, great. He goes, but I don't want to pay for those expensive treats. Like, let's just go to the dollar store and get some treats and sneak them in or whatever. Yeah. Well, did you do it while wearing skin-tight Wranglers? Because he did. And you could see the massive box in his pocket. It was a little awkward.
How embarrassing.
He didn't mind. Saved us some money.
I can say that I've never worn skin-tight Wranglers or Wranglers at all. Maybe I'm missing out on something.
I think you are. You could rock them. You've got legs for days.
I like to wear the baggy ones where I can fit lots of treats in my pocket.
That's a fair point.
Wow.
Good idea.
Was he even able to give you any treats? Could he get them out of his pocket?
He could. It was actually pretty impressive.
Just reminds me of the Napoleon Dynamite where he has tots in his, his pocket.
For sure. That's a little what it was like.
Oh my goodness, that's crazy. Okay, so we talked about divorce and taxes last time, and if you didn't listen to that one, shame on you. Go back and listen to it. And then we'll pick up from where we left off. So in a divorce situation and the divorcees paying taxes, how does it affect if one of them gets the house or some property or anything like that?
Yeah, so it really depends a lot on how things are split. There's always going to be division of marital assets is what we call it.
Okay.
The two people getting divorced, they go through and they figure out how are we going to split all this stuff that we've accumulated over the years, right? And sometimes if they have a lot of liquid assets, they split up the cash. Maybe one of them gets the house, but the other one pays the mortgage down or whatever. Okay. Like, there's a lot of different scenarios that happen.
Okay.
And so it really depends. It's a very individual scenario type situation.
Yeah.
But definitely there's like a lot of different rules, exemptions for gains on like what we would call a primary residence. So let's say you're living in the house and you can exclude a whole bunch of the gain if you have to sell it. If you've been married, your exclusion is twice as high. So there's special situations for divorce. If they sell it within a certain time, they can take
that
higher exemption still while they settle out everything. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff like that that are just kind of nuances that you just have to work through. And same thing like with retirement accounts, like if you have to split a retirement account. If they'll just make a new retirement account and transfer direct the assets that are going there, then it's great. If you take a huge distribution to pay off your spouse and don't roll it into a new retirement account, that's all taxable income.
Wow.
So there's things you got to think through in that division.
How would your average Joe know any of this stuff?
Well, hopefully,
or Jane.
Hopefully their divorce attorneys are telling them, hey, get some advice on this if it's this type of asset.
I would hope
they would know that.
That's true. In my case, we didn't have an attorney. It was an amicable divorce and we just did it online. So thus, I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
But luckily, we've been able to be set
civil.
Amicable.
Yeah.
Civil. Mm-hmm. Okay, so in statuses, there are several that you file under.
Yeah.
So can you explain those?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Sure. Thank you.
That's my job.
And you do it so well.
Thank you. So basically, if you're married on the last day of the calendar year, So if you're married on December 31st and your divorce goes final January 1st, That year of being married until the 31st, you should really file married. So whether You're married filing jointly or married filing separately, Unless you qualify for special circumstances to be head of household, Which you have to be, the one spouse has to not live in the house for 6 months and you still have to have dependents at home. There's like a lot of different things. But generally speaking, if you're married on the last day of the year, you're married. If you get divorced on December 30th instead of the 31st, you're single.
What?
Or head of household.
Serious.
It goes by the last day of the year.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. That is good to know.
Yeah. So that's something if you're planning the dates.
Okay.
Of your divorce. Okay.
I have heard people joke about getting married a certain time.
Yeah, because if you get married on December 30th, then you can be married filing joint for that whole year.
Oh, wow.
Even though you were only married for one day.
Wow.
Yes, same thing goes the other direction.
I didn't know that it worked for divorce as well.
Yes.
That makes sense, though.
Yep, it's just if you're married or not married on the last day of the year. So the biggest differences in married filing joint versus married filing single or separately would be married filing joint, you're jointly liable for the tax.
Okay.
So if you trust your spouse, your ex-spouse, or at least like you have an amicable split, it oftentimes is better for you to file jointly that last year because the deduction's a little higher, and especially if one spouse makes, you know, most of the money and one's like you, for example, when you were a stay-at-home mom, by married filing jointly, he gets to take advantage of your portion of that standard deduction.
Okay.
Where otherwise it would have just been lost because you don't have any income.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely advantages to that. But because you're both liable for the tax, if you don't trust your ex or soon-to-be ex-spouse, or you feel like they're not reporting income correctly or ethically, like maybe they're underreporting, they're taking cash under the table, or they're not actually being honest in their reporting of their income.
Okay.
If it becomes a problem and even down the road. So there's the statute of limitations starts when you file your return.
Okay.
And it's usually 3 years. You've got three open years that you can be audited, right?
Okay.
Unless they suspect fraud. If there is fraud suspected, there is no statute. So if you file a joint return with somebody and they're being fraudulent and you know about it, you are absolutely liable for that tax as well. That they come back and say, hey, we're adjusting this tax and this income based on these things that we've found. You are liable for that tax as well.
So don't file jointly unless
you trust
them.
If you don't trust them or if you feel like they're shady.
Okay.
You're better off filing separate, even though you might not have as good of a outcome on that year.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That totally makes sense.
Just protect yourself.
Okay. So let's say somebody's considering or facing divorce. What are the steps they should take beforehand?
Yeah, so communication is going to be huge.
Yeah, that is huge.
Key part of that.
I wish everybody could be amicable and communicate. I know that's not always possible.
Oftentimes, you see in a divorce situation where one spouse especially will feel really wronged.
Yeah.
And they have a really hard time coming to terms with it. And those times are just hard.
Yeah.
And sometimes if they take a little bit of time to separate and let themselves process all that emotion, sometimes they can come back to the table and be reasonable.
Oh, that's good.
But sometimes not. Yeah. Sometimes it's just not going to happen. But if you can work it out and be reasonable, it really makes sense if you can come with a level head. You need to know beforehand the tax consequences of the things that you're deciding in your asset split. Like those kind of things, you really need to talk it through.
Okay.
And so if you're not amicable with your ex, then if you're using a mediator or you're using attorneys or you have an accountant already or CPA, like they can help you look through all that stuff and just kind of go through like, okay, here's what's going to happen if so, this is split this way or whatever.
Have you ever had the experience where you are in with people getting divorced and kind of have to be the mediator?
Yes, it happens all the time. Usually.
Don't do that to your CPA.
Yeah, that's hard. Kidding. I had one coworker one time that told me a story about these spouses that were separated but not divorced yet. So they were still doing their return together.
Okay.
But one spouse had kicked the other out. Okay. And so this spouse hadn't seen their kids or anything for quite a long time.
Aww.
And so they came early to the tax appointment to be in the appointment already.
Oh, okay.
When the other spouse came, got there with the kids. The other spouse didn't realize they were going to be there.
Ooh.
And it was just like so awkward for the CPA.
Oh my goodness.
But it worked. I mean, it was fine and we get through it.
Hopefully they were reasonable because their CPA was there.
Absolutely. And it was a great opportunity for that one spouse to see their kid.
Oh, good.
Honestly, it turned out to be fine.
That's so hard.
Yeah.
And it happens more than it should.
What's not fun is hearing all the horror stories about the other spouse in the tax appointment. Like,
yeah.
I don't really need to know all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Like, I'm happy to be, you know, supportive and
you're there to help them with their finances and the taxes.
Yeah, and the decisions that are going to impact all
impact
of those
that.
Things.
Okay.
Yeah. Not that I don't love my clients, and I will just talk to them if they need to.
Yes, for sure. For sure. It's just really hard. It's just hard.
Yep.
Okay, so we've talked specifically about divorce. What are the differences if you're widowed?
Yeah, there are quite a few differences, actually.
Okay.
Yep. So we talked a little bit about status, filing status.
Uh-huh.
We talked about being married, filing separate, married, filing joint. We talked about being single.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really talk about being head of household.
Okay.
So one of the statuses that you can have when you're divorced is head of household.
Okay.
That happens if you have dependents at home still.
Okay.
And you provide more than half their support. I mean, there's a little test you have to go through and all that. But
oh, okay.
So the standard deduction is the highest for married, filing joint.
Okay.
And then it goes head of household and then single. So if you can qualify as head of household, that's helpful because your standard deduction's higher.
Oh, okay. Is that if the kids live with you?
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
If you're the custodial parent.
Okay.
But then if you're a widow, if you're widowed,
mm-hmm.
then there's a special status called qualifying surviving spouse.
Okay.
So the first couple of years after your spouse dies, you can qualify if you still have kids at home. You can qualify as a qualifying surviving spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get your standard deduction bumped up to the married filing joint level.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's great. It just gives you a couple years to kind of get on your feet and figure out what's going on
mm-hmm.
without your spouse. Now, if you get remarried during that time,
mm-hmm.
then you don't qualify anymore because then you would file with your new spouse.
Yeah, you'd still get the same.
Yeah, you'd be married filing joint or married
mm-hmm.
filing separate.
Mm-hmm.
So married filing separate, same standard deduction as single. Each of you get it, though. Because you're like, it's like you're filing single, kind of.
Yes.
Except that you're married status.
Okay.
Does that make
it.
Sense? So the qualifying surviving spouse, that only happens for the first couple of years. But then if you still have kids at home, then you can turn over to head of household at that point
mm-hmm.
as a widow. But the other thing that happens, especially right now with the rules as they are, and we love how much the IRS always changes things in the middle
of. Yeah, it's great.
Retroactively apply this and that, you know. But right now, with the rules as they are,
mm-hmm.
there's actually still really good rules for inheritance and like stepping up basis to fair market value on things. So let's say you have a spouse that dies.
Okay.
And they hold a bunch of stocks in a brokerage account.
Okay.
When they die,
mm-hmm.
you get to have their assets
mm-hmm.
at a stepped up basis. So you could sell those stocks with no gain.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
So that can be a huge benefit.
Yeah.
If you need to do something like that. The other thing that you could get stepped up basis on, well, there's lots of different assets that if they own
uh-huh.
by themselves, you can get a full step up.
Oh, okay.
If you own it joint,
uh-huh.
you can get a half step up for their part.
Yes.
And then
that makes
your
sense.
Basis stays the same. So there's lots of planning opportunities that way if you are a widow.
Mm-hmm.
Like my grandma, for example. She had an apartment complex that she owned with my grandpa, and she was getting older. I mean, they'd had it for a million years.
Mm-hmm.
And when my grandpa died, she got a step up on his half of the apartment complex. Then
uh-huh.
she was able to sell it and not have such massive gains
wow.
because she'd held onto that asset for so long. But then she got that bumped up basis. And then that's been helping her as she's been retired later in her life
mm-hmm.
that she's got that money now and not the stress of the apartment complex. But it would have been way harder if she hadn't had that stepped up basis on his half. And it's nice that you can do that qualifying spouse,
mm-hmm.
surviving spouse, because there's really no change to what you've been used to. Oftentimes, those first couple years,
mm-hmm.
if your spouse had like retirement accounts or anything like that, that you've got to pull out
uh-huh.
some of that money to live on.
Yeah.
Like that's all taxable at the same level as it was when they were alive.
Oh.
So to be able to have that extra standard deduction
yeah.
is really helpful. There's a really good chance that you won't go immediately into the workforce.
Okay.
As a newly widowed person. So your earned income might actually be kind of low.
Mm-hmm.
It could also be a great possibility at that point to pull extra money out of like a pre-tax, tax-deferred retirement type of account.
Okay.
And maybe even convert that money into like a Roth type of account that's never going to be taxable for you. So while you have that higher standard deduction,
mm-hmm.
it puts you in a lower tax bracket.
Okay.
So sometimes you can do some bracket planning where you'll pull extra income mm-hmm. more than what you will in the future
mm-hmm.
and convert that income into a different bucket that's okay. a not taxable bucket.
Oh, and that's what a Roth is, non-taxable?
Yes. Yep, exactly. The other thing that you might have is you might have life insurance proceeds.
Okay.
If you're smart, please get life insurance.
Yes.
Please.
I would think that most people would, right?
I hope so. I got my first life insurance policy when I was like 21.
Wow.
And it just gives you such peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, I've never had to use it.
Yeah.
But if I do, I have
yeah.
it. And I actually renewed, well, I wrote a new policy like 2 years before I got cancer.
Oh,
so
wow.
now I don't qualify to get a new policy because I've had cancer.
Oh.
But I already have my life wow. insurance in place.
That is such good advice for, because really I had life insurance when I was married because my husband took out life insurance. But then when I was divorced, I didn't have any on me. You know, I hadn't bought any until just a few years ago, actually.
Yeah, but what would have happened to your kids if something happened to you?
I know, I didn't even think about it. Like, I think
you saddle them with a mortgage,
yeah.
with like all these yeah. things that there's no,
they
I mean.
They would love that.
They
kidding.
Probably would.
They wouldn't.
No. But they could, and they could sell your house. I mean, there's options.
Yeah, but it is good advice to get life insurance.
Yeah.
And it's not even.
You can get a
money.
Pretty cheap policy.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to the widowed though. So if you do have life insurance proceeds
uh-huh.
coming your way, most life insurance proceeds are not taxable.
Oh.
So you might get a windfall. Like
okay.
let's say you have a $100,000 policy on your spouse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that $100,000 comes to you. That's not taxable.
Wow.
And so if you're able to live on that, then that sometimes can also help you convert other income while you have that higher standard deduction.
That makes sense.
See what I'm saying?
Yes.
So let's say you have a $100,000 policy or a $1 million policy
okay.
on your spouse, and then they also have $500,000 in a 401k that they've been saving for their whole life.
Mm-hmm.
They die. Well, that might be the perfect opportunity for you to take a chunk of that money when you have no other income, no taxable stuff because you're living off the life insurance
mm-hmm.
and convert that to future non-taxable and keep
mm.
yourself in like the 0% tax bracket or the 10% tax bracket or
wow.
something like that. Like there's really good opportunities sometimes.
Yeah.
You just got to know what questions to ask.
Yes. Yes. That's so awesome. There's so much to think about and so much that you know that
yeah.
your average person doesn't know.
Yes. And sometimes it's like, I don't really think about it until someone asks a specific question
yeah.
that relates to them or
yeah.
like when we're getting ready for this podcast and
yeah.
I was like, oh, what could I tell them? Well,
yeah,
it's pretty broad.
Yes.
There's a lot of things we could talk about.
I keep encouraging her to do her own podcast. There's a good reason for you to do it because there's so much information.
There is a
and
lot of
information. And she
makes
it so fun. So thanks so much for explaining a lot of things to us. I think the biggest takeaway is that CPAs know a lot, and there's a lot of ways that they can help you in your situation. I know my CPA helped me a ton because I didn't know. So mm-hmm. I'm hoping that this will help somebody out there to get the most out of tax season that will benefit you and not get taken advantage of. So in the meantime,
if you have extra money that you're mad about paying taxes on, send it to me and I'll pay
yeah.
the tax on it.
She'll be happy to pay the tax.
Totally
on.
Will.
So, until next time, happy dating. Hey, are you spinning an indecision? Maybe you're stuck wondering where or how to move forward. Or are you at the point where you can just take one day at a time? I'm a dating coach and I can help. In my one-to-one coaching calls, we'll talk about where you are now, where you want to be, and how I can help you get there. We can do this. I believe in you. Do you want dating tips, funny stories, and real life experiences on the joys and sorrows of being single? Follow me on Instagram, Dating by Deb, and please interact. I love socializing with you.
Debbie Does Dating. with your host, Debbie Clawson. Sponsored by Dating by Debs.